The Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe plug-in hybrid is built for the best of both worlds. For the city buzz, for the call of the wild, for finding solitude, for sharing memories, for day trips, and for far-roaming adventures. Because with gas and electric capability, the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe inspires you to explore more, to explore it all. Tap the banner to learn more. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
The Athletic.
Last night, we were reminded why the Champions League is the biggest draw in world football.
It's Mbappe who scores this time! And surely now Paris Saint-Germain are through to the semi-finals of the Champions League after a quite brilliant quarter-final over two legs against Barcelona.
Meanwhile, FIFA seemed to be stepping back in the battle to stop competitive games being taken abroad. So could we one day see the Premier League or La Liga decided in the USA, or indeed the UEFA Champions League final in Saudi Arabia? I'm Ayewa Kimwelere. Welcome to the Athletic FC podcast. Okay, joining us today, we have The Athletic's Matt Slater and also Adam Crafton, who dropped a piece on The Athletic earlier this week detailing why European football matches might finally be coming to the USA. I mean, Adam, amazing spectacle of football last night in the Champions League. I mean, a goal fest, and I can imagine fans in America were watching it. But I mean, if you think about, you know, the big CBS deal or the Paramount deal for the Champions League, I'm talking billions of pounds. There's a real appetite there, really, isn't there, for Americans to get that flavour of European football?
Yeah, I mean, the key things to remember here are international rights deals now for the Premier League outpace the domestic deal. And the most recent Champions League deal, I think, was a 2.5 times uplift on the previous one as well. You're talking, you know, really, really big money now. And you have to remember as well, with the Champions League in the States, it's quite hard actually to make time in your day to watch this thing, right? Because it's pretty inconvenient. It's about 3 in the afternoon. Most people are at work, but still people are, I think it's become, you know, I was talking to some people yesterday who were saying it's almost just become habit to have it on in the office, right? You're almost simulcasting these games in the office, or you're, as you get in from school, from high school or junior elementary school, people have it on at sort of 4:30 in the afternoon to catch the second half. So I think it's becoming kind of a fabric of people's lives. I think the quite interesting thing with the Champions League, and this was definitely something that was in the minds of the people who wanted to do the Super League, was could you have some of these games at the weekend as well? Because that market obviously then becomes even bigger. And I do wonder over time whether, you know, the Champions League could go that way. Perhaps you move quite a few FA Cup matches to become midweek games rather than weekend games as part of that. But that's kind of a broader story. The background to this is a filing that dropped last week in Manhattan, which basically said that a settlement had been reached between FIFA and a promoter, an events company called Relevant Sport. Now, Relevant Sport, founded by a billionaire, Stephen Ross, who owns Miami Dolphins, and his company for quite a long time have been involved in soccer. So this isn't just like someone that's come along out of the blue thinking, I want to disrupt the sport. For quite a long time, he's had a pretty strong relationship with big clubs in Europe. So you can remember those preseason tournaments called the International Champions Cup, which took place in the United States and Asia and became pretty, pretty popular attendance-wise, and clubs took them a little bit more seriously than you were maybe taking preseason games previously. So that's been going on for around a decade or so. But more crucially, he's also been involved with negotiating TV rights on behalf of European clubs and European leagues, and also UEFA itself. So that deal we were talking about with CBS just now was negotiated by Relevant. La Liga have a very long-standing deal now with Relevant, and I think it was $1.4 billion deal they did with ESPN in 2018. I think it was an eight or 10-year deal, was also negotiated by Relevant. So what I'm trying to convey there is these guys are already pretty embroiled in European football. Now, What they would like to do and what they tried to do in 2018 is take a La Liga game, Spanish La Liga game between Barcelona and Girona to Miami, host it in Miami, and give that US fan base or any different part of the world meaningful access to this sport that they are clearly hugely engaged and invested in. Now, this was resisted by, well, by a lot of people, but crucially, there was a FIFA directive at the time that said games must take place on home territory, barring exceptional circumstances. They then tried the next year to do an Ecuadorian game in the US as well. That was then blocked by the US Soccer Federation, basically pointing to that directive by FIFA. And then for the last 5 years, FIFA have been involved in a lawsuit, and US Soccer as well have also been embroiled in that. And Relevant had brought that case, basically set arguing that FIFA are acting and US Soccer are conspiring, so it kind of act as a monopoly and prevent people from hosting these games, saying it's anti-competitive, that it's not fair, that if the access can be there and if the people involved want it to happen, then why can't we do it? Why should FIFA get to decide this thing in the first place? And that's been the case that's been going on for 5 years. And it's kind of just been this background noise. Everyone in football's known it's there, but it's just been background noise until last week, where it was announced there was a settlement. We don't know what exactly the settlement is, but what we do know is that it was settled without prejudice, which means that it can be reopened at any time. And as far as I understand it, this basically now means that FIFA have agreed to go back and look at their policies on this issue. And the fact Relevant have settled without prejudice basically means if FIFA don't really do what they want, they will just go back to court, right? And in the conversations I've had over the past week, it very much looks to me as though FIFA are going to be stepping back from giving a strong view on this. And therefore, the battle will probably now be looking at, if you want to get really into it, I think it's rule 8.2 in the FIFA handbook, which basically starts to put this responsibility onto federations and confederations. So that would be a battle between organizations like domestic leagues, but also, if it was in England, the English Football Association, UEFA, CONCACAF, the US Soccer Federation. And that's where the next stage of this battle will be. But ultimately, I suppose the story here is that this thing might be happening, but we will discuss as well the many, many, many challenges that it would take in order to get it over the line.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, I can understand from a Relevant perspective, you know, you see these sort of pre-season matches, some of them friendlies really, don't really mean anything, sold out. I mean, you can see the financial implications for this for someone like Relevant. Are you surprised that FIFA have sort of backed down a little bit over this conversation?
No, like for several reasons. So one is that FIFA hates kind of conflict. And endlessly bangs on about the football family. And I think has read the room that there is, for the reason you outline in your question, interest in this happening that FIFA is well aware of. FIFA is, of course, increasingly excited about the club game, has expanded its own Club World Cup, and really, really wants to host it in places like the States and Saudi Arabia, et cetera, et cetera. So it looks a little bit hypocritical. I know that's not a domestic competition, but is very, very interested in staging more meaningful club games around the world. FIFA's also, I think, a little bit concerned about ever being taken to court, particularly in the US, where there is a lot of discovery. That means where the various sides in a dispute can start demanding information that they think might help their case. And that can be emails, documents, et cetera, et cetera. It can be embarrassing. Right. So this is one of the reasons why people settle. They don't want to go through a discovery process. And there is no doubt that there is a business case for this type of thing. Now, type of thing, we can go off in all sorts of directions, right? But soccer, football in North America, big tick. Really big games, meaningful games, competitive games. Yeah, I think there's an appetite for the real thing there. How, when, who to be argued about, fought about. But ultimately, and I think this is where Adam was going with his point about FIFA stepping back and leaving it to confederations, FAs, here we get into haggling, here we get into deal making. Because really, the FIFA directive, the way it was supposed to be, was that these things could happen if your league asked your FA, who asked your confederation, that's the way the sort of football family works, and they ask the confederation concerned where the game would go, and they would ask the relevant FA. And so you go up the tree, and then you go down the tree the other side, right? And everyone is speaking to everybody at the same level. And if both parties, ultimately, the league that wants to take their game abroad and the country that it's going to are like, well, all right, fine. Yeah, we can do this. Then that should happen. And I think that's where we'll get to. And then it all comes down to money again, right? So there'll be revenue sharing conversations. There'll be you coming over here with your really, really sexy products that I'm increasingly worried about people in my country are watching as opposed to our domestic league. If you're willing to share some of the money with us, fine, I compensate us. Or even perhaps more proactively, if we can cross-promote and if we can somehow kind of hitch our wagon to yours and use your product to draw attention to us. So, yes, American Premier League fan, here's an amazing game, a real game that you've got to go to see. But if you really love going to games, you know we've got a domestic product here called the MLS, right? So if you liked it, why don't you go more regularly? So that would be the way that conversation should go in the future. So to go to your question, no, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised by any of this. Nothing shocks me anymore. This is just the latest of the things that we could once upon a time never imagine is hurtling towards us.
You're listening to the Athletic FC podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Adam, I wonder how much of FIFA's stepping back has to do with the impending World Cup in America as well as the potential of the Women's World Cup going there. But also, I mean, we look at the Premier League with all these various stakeholders now, American owners in there as well. What kind of conversations are coming from the Premier League in regards to playing a competitive Premier League game in America?
Well, officially, there's no conversations within the Premier League, and nobody in the Premier League would ever talk about doing this. I think the point you make about the World Cup is significant. You know, I think Gianni Infantino is already moving over to Miami. FIFA have opened offices in the US. I think that's another point, you know, Matt was making around whether US courts would start to have jurisdiction over FIFA. Well, actually, if you move up half your legal team over there and some of your commercial operation, your president's living there, that starts to become pretty hard to argue that the US courts shouldn't have some jurisdiction. I think clearly FIFA see the next few years in the States as a massive opportunity. You know, this summer you've got the Copa America. I know that's not their tournament, but it's, you know, it's a significant tournament. You have the FIFA Club World Cup next summer in 2025. You have the Men's World Cup 26. I would imagine the Women's World Cup 27 if the bid is successful. And then you also have the Olympics in 28. So, you know, it is all eyes on the US for sport, for major global sports events for the next, you know, 4 years or so. So FIFA want a big slice of that. And they also see it as, you know, how long have we talked about football, soccer exploding in the US, that there's going to be this moment where it all takes off, whether it was Beckham or Messi or 94 World Cup. Personally, I don't think single moments change these things. You know, this stuff is trends and patterns, and it takes time, and it's population changes and all that kind of stuff and accessibility. But FIFA are clearly keen to hitch their wagon. And also for a long time, Gianni Infantino has spoken about wanting to have 50 leading international teams that can compete with each other. But he also now talks about wanting 50 global club teams, not just concentrated in Europe. And I think on that, he's got a fair point, right? Like, you know, there's some amazing historic football clubs in Mexico and Japan and the Middle East and Morocco. And a lot of them, you know, now when they come to a Club World Cup, they don't have a chance of winning it, really, because the European team are so much stronger and richer. So I think he's got some sort of point there. So I don't think FIFA have ever been, I don't think FIFA's current presidency would ever have been ideologically opposed to the idea of European matches being played globally, you know. And also, it's not only European matches that could come into this conversation. When you look at the population of the United States, you know, Mexico national team games get bigger attendances than the US men's national team quite often. So you could take two big teams from Mexico, play those games in the US, and that would also be a pretty powerful thing. You may get two teams from Brazil wanting to do that, two teams from Argentina. So it's not just a European story, although that is what is driving this, let's be clear. Last week, Gianni Infantino addressed MLS owners. And as part of this, he was basically saying, put your hands in your pockets, guys, right? This is your chance over the next 3 or 4 years to loosen some of the kind of quite restraining roster rules in MLS about how much you can spend and how much can be allocated to the squads compared to European leagues or even compared to the Mexican leagues. And this is your chance to make a splash. I mean, I think some of these US billionaires in the room were looking at them being like, do you not think we've ever considered spending a bit of money before? And do you not think we've ever considered we don't want to be loss-making enterprises? But he kind of has a point, right? MLS over the next few years has an opportunity, and whether it will take it or not is an open question. I think that, you know, they see, certainly MLS sees the idea of a La Liga game coming over here or a Premier League game coming over here, and they are inherently resistant at the moment. Certainly, I think the MLS commissioner, Don Garber, is incredibly resistant to it because I think there is an insecurity there. Right? The real thing's coming. It could jeopardize our market space, our broadcasting space, our sponsorship, just attendances, right? Could compete. I think some other US sports are nervous it could cannibalize some of their space.
Yeah, that was
as well.
My next question. The NBA, NHL, NFL. Sure. I mean, come on.
But the flip side to that is, well, it's quite a hard argument for NBA and NFL to make, given they go to Paris and they go to London and they go to Germany for big games. And also, I think there is increasingly in these character-based sports, this desire for football and football to blend off one another in some way. I think they're still working out quite how to do that. You know, does Harry Kane at the end of his career go and try and be an NFL player, right? And stuff like that. And just the kind of these conversations between these different sports people. We saw JJ Watt last week do a really interesting thing. You know, with Gary Neville and Roy Keane and NBA as well. I think, you know, there's always Premier League players going to watch NBA. So that's in its very nascent stages, but that's one of the arguments Relevant make. Not only the argument Matt was making earlier, which is, you know, go and sell your tickets at these events, right? Get some sort of deal where if I buy a ticket for Man United v Wolves in New Jersey, I'm also then getting a ticket for NYCFC or New York Red Bulls or whatever, right? So they see the opportunity in that. I think MLS for now are resistant. I think an organization like US Soccer is a little bit more interesting and nuanced. I think they instinctively would probably align themselves with MLS, but there's also a point at which, you know, they would be looking at a return of the proceeds of any of these games. And I think they'd also be looking for, you know, Don Garber a few weeks ago used this great phrase where he said, the soccer world treats America as its ATM. Basically withdrawing money, withdrawing, extracting from the soccer ecosystem. And I think that's true. And I think US Soccer would therefore be saying, well, what are you guys going to put in if you're going to come here and extract? So that might even just be 5-10% of the proceeds go into grassroots development of soccer in the US, meaning that the US has a chance of creating better players. Whether Premier League clubs would be prepared to do that, or La Liga clubs, is a whole other story. And I suppose that's where what we need to really get into, the really fun part of this, is who the hell is going to go and do this? Because that is the thorny, political, scary bit, I think, for most soccer fans.
Just to jump in, I mean, Adam made some great points there. Just a few, just the little bullet points I'd throw in. First of all, it's, you know, NFL, Major League Baseball, NHL, they're all doing it now. All four of the major US sports teams play games abroad, right? And they all do it for the same reason, right? Because they've saturated their own market. They've looked at football, the truly global game, and thought, we'll have some of that. NFL was the first, and arguably they're the most saturated, but they're also the biggest. They're the biggest beast. They've been doing it for 15-odd years. NBA is really interesting, the most global of the truly popular US sports. They've just started to sort of do it, right? They played in London, Paris, Mexico City. They kind of dipped in. NHL, very, very recent. Another, I wouldn't say global game, but truly international game. Finland and Czech Republic, I think it was this year. But they are the most international in terms of the players in their own league. You know, Americans are not the majority there. It's Canadians and then a huge number of East Europeans for years and years and years. They've been absolute superstars in that league from Russia and the Czech Republic, Scandinavia. So a really interesting story there. But they're doing it because they sort of need to. The business case is clear to them. And I wonder how often NHL or NBA executives sit and wonder, oh, I hope we're not ruining the leagues in France and Russia and Scandinavia. No. Major League Baseball, again, like, you know, truly, truly massive and has been trying to take games to... They had their Major League season opener in Seoul, in South Korea. The Dodgers, the story of the summer, they opened in Seoul, not in LA. You know, so they're all doing it. I think the other thing that I would say is we're actually talking about the same people often. The Premier League is half of them are Americans. Half of them own US sports franchises. Half of them own, therefore, stadiums in the States. We are talking about the same people who have the same relationships with broadcasters, who own amazing venues that they want to fill, that know the sports audiences. Right? So this conversation is a conversation amongst people who actually sort of are already bestriding leagues. Right. Now, why is this going to happen? I don't know when. It's going to happen because of this is just the direction of travel. It just is.
You generally think this is going to happen. You don't think they'll keep pushing back and it will come back again. They'll keep pushing back and it'll come back again.
Yeah, because I'm being really vague. This, what does this mean? Are competitive games going to be played in the US? Yes. In the next 5 years? Yeah, almost certainly. In the next 10 years, definitely. Will it be Premier League games? Maybe. I don't know. Will it be a Champions League final? I'd put that as a, you know, pretty high up. Will it be Community Shield, Supercuppa, some stuff that the Italians and Spanish are already doing? Is the Community Shield even a competitive game? Discuss. All right? Well, that's an obvious one, isn't it? That's your sort of hors d'oeuvre. Give it a go. How about early rounds of the Carabao Cup? The EFL have a deal with Relevant. Do people in this country genuinely care about early rounds of the Carabao Cup? Again, look at the EFL. One third of those clubs are owned by North Americans or by Brits who live in North America.
I mean, as Wrexham are climbing, I mean, it could be really interesting, right?
Wrexham the last few summers, sell out.
And again this summer. I mean, I just want to stress these pre-season games, the speed and scale at which they are selling out is mind-blowing. So Man United and Liverpool this summer, South Carolina, College Stadium, 77,000 capacity stadium. There was a pre-sale and then a full sale. It sold out in 3 hours, right? It sold out faster than Beyonce, faster than Jay-Z. The Barcelona Madrid is at the MetLife this summer. I looked at StubHub, one of those sort of ticket resale websites this weekend. $800 was the cheapest seat I could get. When people talk about the opportunity here, I know there'll be fans listening to this saying, well, who cares about the money? Well, actually, quite a lot of people care about the money, not just the owners of the clubs. If we just take the Premier League for a moment, everyone's losing money, right? Everyone's scrambling to hit the profit and sustainability regulations. That's all we've spoken about for the past 6 weeks. So that's why when crypto comes along and NFT comes along, clubs dive headfirst into it. And if this comes along, which is offering huge hits of instant revenue, then they're going to be interested in it.
When Matt was talking about the American owners, we're talking to the same people, and we're talking, you said, you know, whisper it quietly. You know, Premier League clubs probably won't say it out loud, but you look at American owners, you see the money that can be made, you look at PSR restrictions at this moment in time, surely it's a no-brainer.
Well, it's a no-brainer, except that it's not. In the sense of, I think the business case is overwhelming. The challenges are obvious, right? The Premier League at the moment has the threat of a government regulator about to be imposed over it. I think any government at the moment would be putting, well, it's an independent regulator, but I would imagine there would be huge political and media and fan pressure that would do everything to resist this moment. I think it could be potentially not as explosive as the Super League, because actually it's not. Like, we're talking about one-off games here, or one-off rounds of games here. I think there are challenges to get through around, you know, teams might lose a home game or away game or things like that, but you can kind of get around that. I think some teams would actually just agree to waive it because the money would be so big, to be honest. Also, some teams are useless at home, so they'll just think, well, it can't be any worse, right? I think the threat of political intervention is probably a real one. In English football, I think that's one of the reasons why there would be some early resistance. I think the government should also remember, though, you know, an American person said to me yesterday, you know, if the UK had the best diamonds in the world and it was, you know, selling globally all over, and then there was an exhibition that was going on in the States, but you basically said, oh, we're not going to take it there, right? Because, you know, it's too much to take it there, right? You just wouldn't do that with other industries. You wouldn't sort of seek to restrain the movement in other industries. But there aren't that many other industries that claim to be as racinated in their communities as football does still in the UK. So I think, just to go back to Matt's point, the pace of change we will see is, look at the deals that Relevant currently have. So, and when we say deals to sell, basically TV deals, in North America as territories. And those places are La Liga, and they're the guys who have already tried to do it, right? La Liga, I think, would be number one, right? They make no bones about that. Serie A and the French League have already taken cup competitions abroad. They're very keen to compete with the Premier League. They need revenue. I think they go next. I'd put UEFA maybe second, actually, because UEFA also have a deal with Relevant, as we discussed. And I think there's loads of clubs all around Europe, I would include in this English clubs, German clubs, that are very open to taking Champions League games abroad. And whether that is, as Matt says, the Super Cup, which is at the moment Champions League versus Europa League winner, you make this opening tournament at the start that you would involve maybe the two finalists in, or the two finalists, the Champions League, Europa League, or you find some other qualification format for it, and you take that there, and it's competitive in some format. Or you take the opener of the Champions League, and you create a proper opening night. The people that are currently powerful in UEFA and the ECA, people like Nasser Al-Khelaifi at PSG, he is not disguising that he would love to do this. You know, he's saying the Champions League should be as big as the Super Bowl. Right, every Champions League game should be an event. He's spoken glowingly about how Americans do all this like shoulder events around sports fixtures. So you could have concerts, you could have people flying in, VIPs, dignitaries. You make a proper showpiece event of it. So I think there is that appetite there from UEFA. And I don't think that would be resisted too heavily by any clubs, really. The question with all of this is, if, for example, Barcelona go and play Girona in Miami, who gets the money, right? Who actually, where does the revenue go within the Spanish soccer ecosystem? Does it just go to Barcelona and whoever there happened to play? Or if Manchester United go and play Everton, does it just go to those teams? Or, because the Premier League's been quite good at sharing its money, it's been less so over the last few years, does that money get shed equally between the Premier League, particularly if these are just one-off fixtures? Or does one or two clubs have an advantage? And do they actually deserve that advantage because they're the clubs that have had the guts to go and be the guinea pigs as well? you know, and take all the political shitstorm that comes with it. So those are some of the questions that would need to be answered. And then Matt raised EFL, who have a deal with Relevant. I'm sure Wrexham would love to go and play a regular season game in the States. It would be amazing for them. But I would be very surprised if some of the big English clubs let Wrexham go first, actually. So I imagine the Premier League would have to move in unison with the EFL unless the Premier League just decides we're not doing this.
The last thing you want to hear when you need your auto insurance most is,
thank you for calling. Please listen to your list of 46 possible service options.
Which is why when you choose USAA auto insurance, you'll get great service that is easy and reliable. 24/7 online service for claims, access to roadside assistance, and more. All at the touch of a button. Start getting the service you deserve. Get a quote today. USAA. Ability to receive a quote depends on membership eligibility. Membership eligibility and product restrictions apply and are subject to change. USAA means United Services Automobile Association and its affiliates, San Antonio, Texas.
CeraVe Facial Moisturizers with SPF protect skin against damaging UV rays and continuously deliver three essential ceramides to help restore skin's protective barrier so it can lock in moisture. Non-greasy, fragrance-free, and won't clog pores? With CeraVe, skin feels hydrated and looks healthy all day. CeraVe Facial Moisturizers with SPF from the number one dermatologist recommended facial moisturizer brand.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I think because there'll be people listening to this getting angry with us, right? Because we've just spent 25 minutes explaining why we think this is going to happen, direction of travel. I think we should probably remind everyone of the last time the Premier League really tried to do this. That was the 39th game in 2008. I reported on it at the time. It was incredibly controversial and was shot down pretty fast, despite the fact that the clubs really wanted to do it, which is why they're still, you know, 16 years on, reticent to go there again. Certainly to talk about it publicly again anyway. To get around the losing a home fixture, it was a new round of fixtures, 10 games. It was going to be five cities around the world, game on Saturday, game on Sunday. And the TV companies were going to love it. And boom, the minute this got out, it was, I can't believe you're doing this. You know, people raising points about the competitive integrity of the league. You know, how would it work? How would you seed these games? People worried about, well, this is the thin end of the wedge, right? We're your most loyal customers and we don't matter anymore. The people, you know, season ticket holders with this expectation that we should see every game. You know, what are you doing? And then I think the really big pushback, which is where FIFA jumped in, massive opposition from leagues that were already worried back then about the might of the Premier League. And I think, if I remember rightly, it was people like the Japanese League, the Korean League. They were like, you already come over here in the summer and you make us look a bit daft. You can't bring a real game here. This will kill us. And then, you know, MLS as well in North America. These leagues were just very concerned about the Premier League just stamping all over their product. Now, some of those things haven't gone away, which is why I go back to my very first answer that money and negotiation and revenue sharing and cross promotion of the domestic products and just being very sensitive to your host is going to have to happen. Otherwise, this doesn't get off the ground. And that's before we even talk about how you sell this to fans here. And that's why this will be really hard to do. I'm not suggesting otherwise. And incredibly controversial. By the way, I haven't told you what my opinion of it is. I'm just telling you what's going on out there. And I can imagine that the Bundesliga will be last, right? Where there's a very strong fan culture and, you know, a sort of conservatism around the football product and how they talk about it. So there's plenty of hurdles to get over here. And there's plenty of things to sort of pause for thought. And we haven't even talked about the environmental impact. You know, this stuff should not be done lightly. I'm just telling you that the football industry, the numbers are going to make this happen in the same way that people got upset about playing football on Sundays, in the same way that people got upset about third and fourth place teams in the Champions League. It would happen on 48 team World Cups.
I'm a little bit less convinced. Matt says it will happen. And as he said before, what it is a very open question.
And when, right?
I think the biggest challenge, I would say outside of La Liga and maybe Serie A in France, just because they're kind of desperate for revenue at the moment, I think one of the biggest issues that English clubs still have, and we saw this so clearly in the Super League, is there is no one in English football that has the kind of clout and credibility to make an argument to the media and the fans at the moment in a really convincing way that is listened to within English football, that carries a kind of a weight. You know, when you think of, you know, Man City's owner doesn't talk. Chelsea's owners at the moment, you know, are seen in a pretty negative way. And, you know, you can imagine if Todd Bowley comes out and says, we're taking the Premier League to America, how that would go down. Arsenal's owners are pretty quiet. Joel Glazer's not going to be listened to. Jim Ratcliffe might be. He might be in that window, but let's see how the summer transfer window goes. Daniel Levy isn't going to bring the football fans room with him. And everyone just is pointing arrows at Richard Masters, who's CEO of the Premier League. So that makes it very, very difficult, right, at the moment. And I think you would get some players that would probably speak out against it as well because they want, you know, the fans to like them, or they might genuinely not like the idea as well. So I think that's another challenge for the Premier League, because you have to remember the ecosystem of English football will shudder against this. So you have politicians talking out because they either feel strongly or see, you know, easier claim in it. You'll get some very, very traditional conservative views from the media that I think the fans groups will be furious with it. And then you could see a situation where they just fold, because that's kind of been what happened a few times over the past few years. And it's interesting to see whether they kind of resist on this one. And I think the only way that this would happen with England is if they wait it out. So people see La Liga go there for the odd game, and the world doesn't fall in. Italy go there, France go there, Champions League goes there. You know, and I think that would start to normalize it in some way. And then it feels like this thing that has to happen rather than a thing we're driving. I imagine that would have to be the strategic way of going about it, to be honest, because otherwise, I just don't think there is anyone currently in English football that can carry the room with them.
There's an emotional aspect to this, which is the fans, let's face it, you know, and Nick Miller just written a piece on the new sort of culture war gripping, you know, the Premier League in particular, corporate interest versus authentic fans. And we've spoken about corporate interest for the whole of this pod so far. Imagine Dortmund, and you said maybe the German teams might have this massive pushback. Dortmund, do we see that big yellow wall? Can that be replicated in you know, Arizona? You know, if we do get to see a Champions League game over there, do you have the same feeling that you would? And would you get that by watching it as a consumer? And I guess I'm thinking as a European consumer.
Well, can it be replicated? They'll try, right? But then we get into a conversation about authenticity, which is so much of these sort of football culture wars boil down to. If you want the real thing, come here or go to Germany. And they're doing it. Here's the thing, right? I'm not telling anybody to do anything they're not already doing. Football tourism is a fact. It's a massive success story, not just for English football clubs. I would argue for UK PLC, right? It's happening. But how far do you go, right? And when do you spoil it? That's, I think, the thing that everyone should have in their mind. Don't spoil it. Right, let it happen. Or, you know, if this thing's going to change, should it change organically? You know, that's normally best. So, this debate between, you know, your loyal customer, the ones you can reach, the ones that football clubs could, you know, traditionally reach through season tickets, the people that would buy the real shirt, not the fake shirt, people that buy the most expensive TV subscription. That's all changing. It's been changing for my entire life. And the big clubs, the Premier League clubs, know that best. They can see their own numbers. They know how many tourists are in the game, in the grounds every game. They know where they're selling shirts. They know how well their overseas tours do. They know where their sponsor, you know, portfolio is. And they know that, that the pressure they're under. Oh, can you come over here? You know, we're your tire sponsor. We're from Korea. Can you come, you know, can you come here? Can we have access to your players? They know all this better than you or I. And that inevitably leads to tensions to your, as I said, your most loyal, the fans you can touch. And let's be honest, the fans who will save your club when things go wrong. And unfortunately, that's the other thing that I spend my time writing about. They're the ones that will go out with buckets and organise whip rounds and write letters to MPs and campaign outside grounds. So this is the thing. So there is this endless tension between the way football was, the way football has sort of been constructed in this country and every other country around the world, by the way. They have fans and leagues and stories like this everywhere. And the way it's going, particularly at the top end. And it's a global game. And they're playing a global game, these globalists. Inevitable tensions. This is just one of them.
Which brings me on to ticketing, really, and sort of finish on this, Adam. I mean, you talked about how quickly those tickets sold out in America. Also, we're seeing ticket prices rise in the UK as well and within the Premier League. I mean, this is the thing. Is it slowly becoming out of reach of those people that Matt is speaking about? You know, the guys that would picket to their MPs and say, we demand this for our club because we have this emotional and cultural connection to it.
If you go and try and buy a ticket for a premium product sports event in the United States and compare those prices to what the Premier League are asking for back in the UK, I mean... I'm just making that comparison, not saying, you know, it's right or wrong what Premier League clubs are doing, but you know, even if you look at West End tickets at the moment, right, like there's maybe an argument that the Premier League, because it's been so successful, has actually been able to keep ticket pricing at a reasonable level. You know, I'm not talking about the hospitality and the amazing seats here, but you know, the general pricing, I think for quite a long time, it's been pretty fair. And they've kept the away tickets to a reasonable price as well. Whether that will stay, I think, is a bigger question. And you have to remember as well that, so when I talk about those the US premium tickets, people don't travel within the US like they do for Premier League games. And no one over here can really get their heads around the fact that it costs, you know, £300 to go on a train to go 2 hours in the UK at the moment if you happen to book on the wrong day. Right. So that there's, although the headline ticket pricing in the States, you know, if you're Chelsea's owner, LA Dodgers, and you're comparing those ticket prices, you will be looking and thinking, God, that's different, right? That is less than it maybe looks like it should be. But there are all these other factors which come in, like the travel people make, what they spend at the ground, etc. And also just the fact, you know, the UK's economy has stagnated at best, right, for quite a long time now. And as a result of that, people aren't earning more and people are struggling with the cost of living crisis. And, you know, I mean, the Tottenham one a few weeks ago where they did the price rise, but then Daniel Levy gets a bonus that's almost equivalent to what you earn from the price rise. It's just like, what are you doing, right? Just like see the optics of this and just don't do it like that, right? Like do your bonus next year. Right, if you're going to do it, right, or don't do it this year. It's incredible how often some of these guys that are really, really clearly smart from a business point of view make decisions that they must realize are going to cause them a load of hassle, right, and a load of backlash. And that's why you should never rule out games going to the United States, because they will do things that are, they will try and do things that they either know or are told and do not listen to their advisors are going to be hugely unpopular. And by the way, we've spoken about the United States for quite a long time here. There are some other places that might fancy a game, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. We spoke about Asia briefly, but there's another place that has a World Cup in 2034 that's already hosting Spanish games, Italian games, Saudi Arabia. They could pay, right? They've got a pretty strong fan culture there. I mean, actually, not all the Saudi league games get filled, but like the big ones involving Ronaldo tend to do pretty well. So, you know, as far as I know, Relevant haven't been speaking to Saudi, but that doesn't mean other people within football aren't speaking to Saudi. Sounds like Gerard Piqué has been speaking to Saudi quite a lot over the past few years in terms of, you know, Spanish Super Cup going over there. So, yeah, I mean, this is a conversation we've had about the US, but it could be a way bigger one, you know, and that's why the first one is so important, because it just creates a precedent that enables lots and lots of other people to go and do it.
All right, gents, let's end it there. Matt, Adam, really appreciate your time, and do not forget to rate and review the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you for listening.
The Athletic.